It is my great happiness to be with you this evening. My sincere gratitude to each of you for coming. How we utilize the precious time of our life is very much what determines the quality of the life that we live. Today, before eating this mountain, I'd like to offer some food for thought. I was asked to speak on the subject of spirituality and vegetarianism. This is a vegetarian cooking class. We'd like to offer some relevant insight into why throughout history countless persons who were seeking spiritual enlightenment chose to be accepting a vegetarian diet. One of the principles of spirituality, which is so very vital, is explained in Sri Bhagavad Gita. The Sanskrit, Vidyabhanaya Sampane Brahmani Gavihastini Suni Chaiva Svapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. In essence, what this verse is saying is that a learned person, a person who has spiritual insight, will see the essence within every living being's heart. Whether one is a saintly priest or whether one is a criminal, whether one is an elephant or a dog, what is the essence of life? Who is the person that is residing within the body? And therefore, a person with truly spiritual vision will see everyone in an equal way. In order to really understand truly the concept of respect for life, it is important to comprehend what is life. What is the difference between a prime minister and a simple sweeper of the street? What is the difference between ourselves and a dog or a cat or a cow? According to the great spiritual literatures of the world and the saints of history, the difference is simply a particular state of consciousness in a particular body. But what is the nature of the life force? When we were little tiny children, we had very different values than we had now. What are the values of a baby? And what are your values now? Are you thinking of the milk from your mother's breast? When you were a baby, were you thinking about your next exams at NYU? It's a very different mentality. And there's also a very different body that has evolved. So it is the conscious force, the spiritual spark, the conscious essence that is who we really are. We're seeing through our eyes, we're tasting through our tongue, we're hearing through our ears, we're feeling through our skin, we're thinking through our brain, we're loving through our heart. But who are we? What is life? What is the difference between the corpse of a dog and the corpse of a human being? They're both like cars or vehicles without a driver inside. There's no one inside to see through the eyes. There's no one inside to experience life through that body. What is the nature of that life force? This is not just a matter of religion. This is a matter of science. spiritual science. What is consciousness? Who are we? What is the source of our life? And when we enter deeper and deeper into this spiritualistic science, which is so very relevant and important in life, then we actually enter into the realm of seeing every living being with love and respect. The Gita explains, Sarva yoni shukontaya murtaya sambhavantiya. This means that the absolute truth, or who we call God, that absolute truth is the source of everyone, the seed-giving father and mother of all living beings. We speak about universal brotherhood and universal sisterhood, but unless we understand our common origin, how could we realistically and practically identify ourselves as brothers and sisters? Brothers and sisters have the same father and the same mother. What do we all have in common? From a spiritual perspective, all life is emanating from the same source. To the degree we learn to love God, to that degree we spontaneously and naturally have love for every living being. The absolute truth is considered to be like the sun, and all living beings are like the rays of that sun. Qualitatively, we are all of the same nature. So why are there so many different species of life and so many different races and castes and various conditions even within human existence? According to the spiritual science, this is due to the laws of karma. Karma means the law of cause and effect. For every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. So different people are put into different particular bodies and different particular conditions of their bodies according to their previous activities and the previous particular types of consciousness that we cultivate. But in essence, these karmic conditions are just temporary phases. Who are we? And really, what is our true relationship with other living beings? So therefore, the spiritual principle is wherever there is life, there should be respect, there should be honor, and ultimately we should cultivate love and compassion. Compassion, forgiveness, are two of the most basic universal spiritual principles. Now, in today's world, there is much conflict amongst religion due to sectarian beliefs, which are usually based on egoistic interpretations of a particular doctrine or a particular religious field. But what are the universal essential principles which can practically be seen, that are exhibited by anyone who truly goes into a spiritual path? One of the primary qualities is compassion. People with spiritual ideals do not necessarily go into a life of vegetarian diet simply because it's good for health. It is good for health if we know how to do it properly. Even so many of the allopathic doctors, they are learning this. When I first became a vegetarian, my father and mother became horrified. They never heard of such a thing, because they're from another generation, you know. They never heard of such vegetarian. You know, deers and cows are vegetarians. Humans are not vegetarians. So they were really worried that I would die from lack of protein and so forth. So my father, one of his best friends for so many years, was his doctor. And he asked his doctor, Dr. Atlas was his name. He said, "What am I going to do about my son? How will he maintain his life? He's a vegetarian." Now, this doctor was a very, very big doctor, very well known in his field. He said, "Your son is a vegetarian?" He said, "If he sticks to that diet, he will outlive all of us, because that is the best diet." He said, "My whole career, basically, I know, unless I tell people to change their diet, their health is not going to be good. And vegetarian diet, if it's done properly, is the healthiest, best diet there can be." So my father said, "Then why don't you become a vegetarian?" He said, "Because I'm addicted to meat, but I know it's wrong." So purely from a health point of view, it's a better diet. So much heart disease and other cancer and such illnesses are very much being connected to a meat-based diet. But people in the spiritual path, that is not the reason that they choose to be vegetarians. From aesthetic purpose also, vegetarianism has many advantages. Aesthetically, it's a pleasing diet. At the school that I used to go to, this was in the 1950s, they used to have a field trip to a slaughterhouse with the little children. And all the children would be crying when they'd be seeing these cows being slaughtered and their flesh being ripped off and they're screaming in pain. Children were horrified. And the parents were complaining to the school, so they canceled these trips. It's not very pleasing. What you see in the supermarket when it's nicely packaged and colored and everything like that is not really its origin. One time I heard on a radio, I was on my way to be teaching a vegetarian cooking class at Cincinnati, Ohio, and I was in a car and somebody put the news on, and on this show, it was a talk show, and there was one lady, she called up, and she was complaining. Actually, this lady, now I remember, because this was some years ago. This lady was a representative of the Anti-Cruelty for Animals. And she was explaining how she saw someone tying their dog to a post with a chain that was only about 6 inches. And that dog was suffering. And she was boasting how she called the Anti-Cruelty Society to come. She's part of it. She called the police, and she actually had that person arrested and fined. So someone called on the phone, questions and answers, and asked that lady, "What did you eat today?" Said, "I ate a hamburger." What's the difference between that dog and this cow? You're so much concerned about taking care of a dog because if it's a living being with feelings. But what about the cows? Just because you don't personally know them, it doesn't mean they have less feelings than your dogs. There's a saying, "Love me, love my dog." And here in New York, I've seen today, I was taking a walk, people were very lovingly going behind their dog with little bags, rubber gloves, and catching the droppings behind their dog. And it was very like a mother to a baby, almost like changing the dog's diapers. Just picking it up and wrapping it up and putting it in a nice bag and putting it away. There's affection. Because there's a relationship. Because there's life there. Nobody would want their dog or cat to be slaughtered just because somebody else likes the taste of their flesh. But believe me, cows and chickens and lambs and all of these other animals, they value their life as much as our dogs and cats value their life. In fact, they value their life as much as you and me and all of our families value their lives. They will fight for their life. They will scream in pain, just as we do. The only difference is they may not be as intellectual. One person once challenged my spiritual teacher that the reason why it's all right to eat animals but not humans is because animals have no soul. But what is the symptom of the presence of the soul? It is life. Where there's life, there's the presence of the spiritual spark, the soul. Maybe a different body. Some people are driving in Fords and some people are driving in Mercedes. But the person inside is not different. They're both people. So similarly, whether we're in a body of an animal or a body of a woman or a body of a man, where do we can justify anything? Do you know in this country of America, just a couple hundred years ago, in the churches, many churches, it was their doctrine that women had no souls, that black people had no souls. It took a little bit of philosophy, a little bit of common reasoning to understand that there's no difference in quality between the soul of them and us. But we can make all kinds of doctrines and we can have all kinds of ways of thinking just to justify the way we want to treat other people. So, when this lady was challenged in this way on the television, she didn't know what to say. She didn't know what to say. She had no answer. What is the difference between a cow and that dog? So yes, aesthetically, to go to a field where they're harvesting wheat or collecting strawberries is very nice. To go to a slaughterhouse, it's very difficult. It's not very aesthetic. In fact, for most of us, it's horrible. But it's not simply for aesthetic reasons that spiritual people choose a vegetarian diet. There's also ecological reasons. For every 20 pounds of grains you give a cow, you get just about 5 or 6 pounds of meat. Yes. Or how many pounds is it? Just a couple pounds of meat. With a couple pounds of meat, how much can you feed a family? Practically 10 times more from grains. And grains are more healthy. So ecologically, starvation in the world, when you're putting, actually it's 16 pounds of grains for 1 pound of meat. That's it. I'm out of practice with this particular subject. I'm sorry. 16 pounds of grains, 1 pound of meat. There's so much shortage in this world. And one of the greatest reasons for shortage is because how we're utilizing the land. But that is not really the reason most spiritual people turn to vegetarianism. It's because of the simple reason of compassion. When I was young, there was the civil rights movement. Yes. In fact, in 1969, I was on a civil rights march trying to give awareness that we can't treat people disrespectfully and cruel just because of the color of their skin. Equal rights. But from a spiritual point of view, it's not just humans. wherever there's life, there should be respect. There should be a sense of equality.
Thank you, thank you.
Do you all hear? We all have choice of what we want to do within our lives, how we ought to utilize the moments we have within the life we are given. The special quality of human life is the development of the quality of our consciousness. To be humane means to be avoiding unnecessary violence to others. In Sanskrit, the word for nonviolence is ahimsa. Ahimsa really means not to be the cause of unnecessary misery or confusion to others. Are we going to limit that only to people of our own religion? Our own family? Our own race? Our own nationality? Or even our own particular species? This has been one of the greatest misfortunes in human history. How people want to extend their egoistic conceptions of life on their interpretation of reality. In Germany, Adolf Hitler, he had a whole plan. And he wrote a whole book about that plan. And basically, that plan was that his race was the supreme race on earth. And other races were actually disturbance to the earth. And they should be destroyed. Today we hear about ethnic cleansing. There are peoples of religions today who believe anybody from our religion is of God, and anyone who is not of our religion is of a satanic principle. And cleansing the world is exterminating them. Yes? What is this? False ego. Being clothed in the name of religion. This is done socially. It's been done nationalistically. It's been done in the name of religion. But if we actually turn to our real common sense and the words of the saints and the holy scriptures and the great philosophers of the past, we will learn to respect every living thing. Amanina manadena. This is a basic spiritual principle. To offer respect to all others and not to be concerned with the respect we receive ourselves. In the Christian tradition, there is that story of St. Francis, where he saw a little boy who just purchased some birds, and he was bringing them to the market to be slaughtered. And he convinced that little boy that, why do you want to kill these little creatures of God? They're your brothers and sisters. Don't you see they love life like you? So he gave the birds to St. Francis and he let them go. And as the birds were flying in the sky, he was saying, oh, my brothers and sisters, God has given you the whole sky to enjoy and to flourish and to to procreate and to be happy. Lord Buddha, that was the basic principle of Buddha's whole mission, was ahimsa, nonviolence. People in the name of religion were slaughtering innocent animals, and it was unbearable to him. Why? Just because we like the taste of their bodies. If it's a matter of dying or eating an animal, then it's justified by spiritual principles to eat it. But if there's so many other alternatives, why? So he very, very much boldly and strongly risked so much to protect the rights of the innocent. And the law of karma is, as ye sow, so shall you reap. Or in scientific vernacular, for every action there is an equal corresponding reaction. Do unto others as you would like them to do to you. But to really practice that, we have to understand why. Because in the body of that little animal is a soul that is like me, that is alive, that loves life, that wants pleasure. When I was living in jungle of Himalayas, I was very carefully studying the animals. Because I was really thinking that in studying the animals, I could understand human society very nicely. Because they're unsophisticated. But they have the same basic pursuits in very unsophisticated, untechnical ways. How in a tribe of monkeys, they were battling over territory. They were battling over territory that had the most fruits and berries and herbs, and how the mothers were taking care of their children and defending their children, and how there was so much mating going on. They were seeking happiness. They were eating, they were sleeping, they were mating, they were defending, they were in the pursuit of happiness. And those of you who have had dogs or cats, you know how much their happiness is important to you. In the family I lived, everyone fought with each other, except nobody fought with our dog. So he was the most popular person in our family. We all loved each other, but we fought. We loved our dog and didn't fight. He was like the centralizing, harmonizing factor. And this is true for so many families, is it not? So why not extend this principle to understand that every living being is a life-loving child of God? And if we cause harm to any living being, that same harm is going to come upon us. That is the law of nature. Leonardo da Vinci, we like to look at his art. But my question, brothers and sisters, do we like to hear the consciousness that created that art? Leonardo da Vinci was a vegetarian for humanitarian reasons. He boldly spoke, he even wrote it, that when man becomes civilized, when human society becomes civilized in the true sense of the word, then he will see that killing a man and killing an innocent animal is the same thing, murder. George Bernard Shaw, we like to read his playwrights and see his dramas. What did he say? Very wise, deep-thinking person. We talk about peace. We talk about nonviolence. But our stomachs are the graveyards of the corpses of others. Man will actually come to the state of intelligence when he sees that there is a connection between everything we do and the reactions. If we're killing animals in the slaughterhouses, then our own children will be killed in the battlefields. He said, you cannot disconnect the two. These are the laws of nature. And if you're not part of the solution, we're part of the problem. As human beings, deep thinking and trying to live by the highest possible values of life, that is what gives fulfillment to the heart. So vegetarianism has been a very, very sacred part of great spiritual people's lives since time immemorial. It is a quality of humility and respect toward others. A quality of the sanctity toward life. Now, people may say, what is the difference between killing a vegetable and killing an animal? That is a common challenge. We have already explained that there is a difference. You cannot live without some violence. When you breathe, some microbes may be killed. If you've seen the Jains, they wear masks just so that they don't kill microbes. In New York City, that may not work. But the idea of trying to minimize unnecessary violence, especially to those people, those living beings who have the developed enough consciousness to really, really value their lives. How many of you have ever eaten Kellogg's cereal? Please raise your hand. Do you know who J.H. Kellogg was? Do you know why he started his cereal company? Because he was a vegetarian. Not only that, he was the leader of a whole vegetarian society. And he wanted to provide nutritious breakfast meals for people so that they didn't have to resort to killing innocent animals. And he had a very, very simple formula of what to eat and what not to eat. Should I tell? Very simple. He said, if it runs away, don't eat it. Apples don't run away. Wheat doesn't run away. But fishes swim away. Yes. And animals will run away. They're just as we would run away. This is perhaps the greatest need in human society today. A spirit of compassion toward others, a spirit of humility, respect, and service toward others, a spirit of seeing the equality of life without egoistic justifications to have bad attitudes or persecute others. It's been happening since time immemorial. There's a great need for actual compassion. And in order for compassion to be substantial, we must have a scientific, philosophical conviction why. Because there's so many reasons why not. There's laws of state. Sometimes we hate somebody and we'd actually like to see them in some other body. But because there's laws of state, we will tolerate it. Yes? But there's also laws of nature. There's also laws of God. And they will act, maybe not as swiftly as the law of state, but they will act without question. So to tolerate our propensities to cause harm to others, fearing a reaction, is not a very spiritual principle. But it is a reality. To tolerate in a positive way, to actually try to develop real compassion, concern, care, and love for every living being, is the basis of spirituality. Throughout history, persons who lived by the spirit of compassion are people who are actually loved throughout history. So many of you are students, and you are, at this time of your life, not only performing your studies, but you're exploring so many alternatives of which direction you're going to live throughout your life, both in your career as well as in your internal personal lifestyles. So our humble request is, please consider the sanctity of this principle, to value the spiritual essence of life, to value the presence of God within all living beings, and to nourish that through our behavior, through our association, through our lifestyle. Every living being is part of the Supreme Lord. If you water the root of a tree, automatically that water is brought to every part of the tree. If we learn to love the spiritual source of everything, there are many names of God. In our own spiritual tradition, we call upon God as Krishna. Krishna is not a sectarian concept. Krishna means the all-attractive one. That supreme personality that is the father, the mother of all living beings, that is the ultimate object of all of us, and who is simply all-attractive, all-beautiful, all-lovable. In the Bible it is said, love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. If you love God, you will love all your neighbors. Your Oriental neighbors, your African neighbors, your European neighbors, your Asian neighbors, your male neighbors and your female neighbors. Today there's so much conflict between, rivalry between sexes, rivalry between races, rivalry between nations, rivalry between religions. What is all this rivalry based on? Just seeing each other and identifying with the bodies, not seeing the soul, not seeing the life, not seeing the essence. To love God means to love the essence of all living beings. And you cannot love God unless you are actually striving to show respect and compassion to all living beings. Otherwise, it is very deficient. This is a very, very basic spiritual principle, which is so very, very important. And vegetarian diet, there are so many varieties and so many wonderful ways to prepare them. that we can be spiritually humane and compassionate to others, and at the same time eat wonderful, wonderful food. Mountains of food. I don't think this mountain is big enough for all of you, though. There is more, I think. Yes. And this food is prasad. It is spiritual food. Cooked, prepared, and in a spirit of devotion. So I'm very happy for this opportunity to share these thoughts. Thank you very much. Would like anyone like to ask any questions? Would you like to know how I became a vegetarian? Is there time? How many would like to know? How many would not like to know? It's a story that was very transformational in my own personal life. I was 19 years old. I hitchhiked from London to India. That means I went through London, Holland, Belgium, France, Switzerland, Italy, Greece, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and then I came to India. And the first day I was in India was it's a long story, but I'll make it very short. Because you're waiting for the mountain and the mountain is waiting for you. First day I was in India, it was nighttime. And I was walking in a very, very crowded street in Old Delhi. It's called Chandni Chowk, big bazaar street. Somehow I was there and I was just walking and I was completely fascinated by this very new culture that I was experiencing. And one man, very nice man, I was 19. He seemed like an old man then. He was probably about 40. Now I'm 54, so he seems like a young man. So our perception of reality changes as our life progresses. But this man asked, "Where do you come from? Why have you come to India? What is your educational qualifications? Have you eaten dinner?" The last question I answered. So he brought me to this little restaurant. And this restaurant was... I've never seen a restaurant like this. There was no doors and no walls. It was just right on the side of the street, and the tables were just set up in the street, and we're just sitting on the side of the road, crowded road. And there were cows walking around along with the cars and the rickshaws and the people. There were cows walking around and bulls just amongst the people. So where I was sitting, it was a beautiful cow, mother cow, with her little calf. They were sitting about as close as the mountain is to me now, just a few feet away. And I had never been so close to a cow in my whole life, because in America, at least in those days, the 50s and 60s, the closest I ever saw a cow was in a pasture when I was driving down the highway. And they were somewhere eating grass. But here this cow was sitting just inches from me. And she had her little calf. And that little calf was so beautiful. Beautiful lotus-like eyes. Beautiful white fur. And so happy, just jumping and frolicking around and playing. And the mother was constantly trying to take care of the calf, was licking the calf's body, feeding the calf her milk. And this exchange of love between the cow and the calf was very, very real. It was very sweet. It wasn't that much different, except for some intellectual differences. It was like the love between our mothers and us when we were young. There was affection. That mother would do anything and everything in the world to protect her calf. I could see it, how she was worried about the calf, how she was watching the calf, how the calf was playing, how they were giving so much joy to each other. As the mother cow was licking her calf, there was practically tears in her eyes. There was affection. It was real. And I was just really enjoying this. I never saw anything like this before. And then the food came. And we were eating it. And my host, he asked me, "Would you like to know what everything is that you're eating?" And I said, "Please." Because I didn't recognize anything. It was all Indian food. And in those days, there was very few Indians in America. And I never met one until I came to India. So he said, "This is called roti. That means bread. And this is dal, lentil soup. This is sabji, vegetables. And this is chutney, condiment." He was explaining everything like this. "And this is chawal, rice." And he said, "And do you want to know what is on the rice?" I said, "What?" He said, "Meat." When he said meat, I was looking at the cow and calf. It was the first time in my life that I made this connection. We're eating meat, but do we ever really make this connection? I started to cry. All my life, I've been eating these cows and these calves without even consideration of what it is about. For me to eat this, somebody slaughtered this cow. Cow just like this. Calf just like this. Just for me to eat it. And do I need it? The meal would have been very nice without it. There's so many grains, so many vegetables, so many fruits, so many nuts, so many milk products, so many nice things. Do we need it? And I was thinking, why human society? Myself, my friends, my family, so many people. We don't make this connection. Even though we know it's coming from that animal, we don't really make the heart connection. What it really means. I started crying. And the person said to me, "What's wrong?" He was completely bewildered. His guest was weeping. And I just couldn't talk. I said, "I have to go. I'm sorry, I have to go." And I got up to go, and as I passed, I looked at the mother cow, and the mother cow looked at me, and she reached over and licked me on the leg, which I considered to be symbolic of something, that she approved of my respect for her life and her child. And that night, when I went to take rest on the roof of a building, all I could do was dream of that cow and calf. And I got sick. I started vomiting. And I vowed. I vowed at that moment on a rooftop in Old Delhi in 1970 that I would never eat meat again. Because I was seeking a spiritual path. And this was such an important part of life. To learn to be humble and compassionate toward other living beings. Now, that means all living beings, including humans. Because Hitler was a vegetarian. But obviously, it wasn't for compassionate reasons. Act actual compassion. Our compassion is deep and fulfilling to the heart to the extent it expands with equality for the well-being of all living beings. And I do believe it is one of the greatest needs in the world today for people to learn what is love and what is compassion, and to help to clean our hearts to understand these principles. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.